Aloha mai kakou. My name is Jace Kahalukula Saplan, and I am the Director of Choral Activities at the University of Hawaii and the Hawaii American Choral Directors Association State Chapter President, serving from fall 2020 to the summer of 2023. I am so excited to introduce the first episode of our podcast called Nanai Mua, Honoring Hawaii's Choral Legacy, supported and sponsored by the University of Hawaii Choral Program and Hawaii ACDA. On this podcast, we explore the incredible history and culture of our unique choral legacy here in the middle of the Pacific through kukakuka, discussions, and mo'olelo, storytelling, with pillars of Hawaii's choral community. It is fitting that we honor in our first episode Auntie Wanda Garibin, who has done so much for our choral community here in Hawaii. Auntie Wanda is many things to Hawaii. For starters, she was chairwoman of the music department of St. Andrew's Priory for over 25 years. She was founder and director of the Pacific Rim Children's Choral Festival. She was a church musician in Hawaii for 30 years, serving at St. Timothy's, St. Peter's, and St. Christopher's. She was the founder and artistic director of the Hawaii Children's Chorus, life member of the National American Choral Directors Association, owner of the group Travel Services Hawaii until 2012, specializing in serving performing groups traveling to Hawaii. She was a patron of the performing arts and was on the board of the Hawaii Youth Opera Chorus, the Oahu Choral Society, and also a member of the board for the National Youth Choir of Great Britain, and a cherished choral arranger published by Hal Leonard Music. However, what is most important is her role as a mentor to many of us. Her conversations on her couch are life-giving and provide such needed wisdom for me, and I'm sure for all of us. Let's peek in our conversation, where I start off by asking her about her childhood and why she wanted to immerse herself in the choral arts.
Well, I became a choral director because in the fourth grade, I was in a children's chorus at my church. It was a church children's choir. And I went to the first rehearsal, and there was this person up there getting me and everybody else in the room to sing, and I was enchanted. And the more I came to the rehearsal, the more I saw this person and said, I want to do that. And so from the fourth grade, I didn't play piano at that point, and I came home and told my mother that I wanted to take piano lessons. So I informed him. We didn't have a piano. My parents were not musicians, but I had this vision. It was seeing it and resonating with it. And so I was in the children's chorus from fourth, fifth, and by the sixth grade, I was, excuse me, the student director Ooh. Of the children's chorus at my church. And so I helped with, throughout junior high, I was involved in children's cantatas and things like that. So I was really very involved and focused. And that was a privilege. Mm. Not everybody gets that. You know, they don't have a clue what they're going to do, but I knew. And I had this vision that I would be a high school choral director or in college. And that's where I went. That's what I did. Mm. And in high school, I also went to a very good public high school that had a very good music program. I was fortunate. It's good fortune. Mm-hmm. Because, as I said, my parents weren't the model. It was the church and the school was the model.
It was the institution, the organization, the structure
and that was there. And the people they hired.
And the people that they hired.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a funny story about a friend of mine who was in my same class, so we talk on the phone now and again. He was in the choir at the time, and he tells more stories. He remembers more stories of me in high school than I do. And he was reminding me that there was a moment of, because I was the student director, our director, who from time to time would say, well, Wanda, you take the rehearsal at this point, or she would have to go out for a reason, and Wanda, you do this. And I just did. I just thought that was what I was supposed to do. Mm-hmm. So there was an occasion that we were going to be on television, and live television morning show in Houston. And we had to, the choir had to get there, and we had to sing. And it was in December, because we were singing Christmas music or something like that. And we all got there on our own, not on a bus, but on our own. And when I came in, the director of the show said to me, "Your teacher has just called, and she's quite ill. She's not able to get here, and she said for you to take the choir. We're going to be on live television."
Oh, wow.
And John's telling me the story. I have no memory of it whatsoever. But John says that I get everybody up and we sing the Hallelujah chorus. And I'm conducting this high school choir on live television.
Oh, wow.
So anyway, that was my story. So then I went off to school and had to get serious and study.
Wow. Awesome. So you got your start at a very early age.
I did.
In terms of not just like choral singing, but just also stepping in front of the ensemble and facilitating instruction.
And I deem that as fortunate.
Right.
Yeah. And later, as I was teaching, I would come across students who had no clue. They were about to leave for college, and they'd say, "I just don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what to, you know, study or what to major in." And I'd say, "Well, the university or the college is the time to explore many things."
Right.
And so, in fact, I did that too. Although I was focused on the choir, I explored other things. For instance, did you know that I was a math major?
I did not.
Well, there you go.
I mean, it makes sense now, considering your administrative prowess, but yeah.
I was a math major, and I got my degree in music, but I have enough credits that could have...
I mean, the power of a liberal arts education, I think, just innately turn us or transform us into better choral artists.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The more you can experience that. Because I think sometimes, you know, prodigies, let's talk about them for a second. Sometimes I wonder, because they're so focused that they don't crack out of that paradigm enough to explore, as you say, the
come up
arts.
For air and make connections. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that happens. You finish your college degree. What brings you to Hawaii?
Well, my husband and I came from New York. Uh-huh. I met him in New York City.
Okay.
And he, long story short, we were there, and it was time for us to move on for lots of reasons. And long story short, we tried several things and got halfway across the United States. And a friend of his, became a mutual friend, said, "You might try Hawaii. It's a new state, and they need new young professionals. There are opportunities out there." And long story short, that's what happened. My husband came, we got to California, and he flew first. Now, that's another discussion. But anyway, he came to see. He got three jobs the day he landed. One at the Star Bulletin, one at KHVH, and the other one with United Press International. He was a journalist. And he had been with UPI in New York, so that was good. And so he called me and said, "Get on the next plane." So when I flew over, the planes landed, and you had to get off on the tarmac. There was no, you know, big thing. This was early 60s. And so I got off the plane, and I saw Diamond Head. There was no high rises, so it was straight shot from the plane to Diamond Head. And this ocean, fresh ocean, just was, the smell of the air was so fresh and clean. And I smelled plumeria. Didn't know to call it plumeria, but I remember consciously saying, "Well, this will do. I'm home." And it has been my home since. And I got a job once I got here, and I looked in the paper for a job. I got a job with a piano studio that was in Pearl City. I had no idea where Pearl City was. And between downtown Honolulu, where we lived, to Pearl City, I took the bus through cane fields.
Wow.
You know, it was all cane. Right. There was no Salt Lake.
Right.
There was nothing. It was all cane fields. Got all the way to Pearl City. And we had had an interview, the woman who owned this new studio, and what she was offering to someone she was going to hire was a waiting list of 10 private students. Who walks into 10 private students? So I felt like, wow, this is wonderful. So anyway, that's the story of how I got here.
Chance, up to chance, and it worked out in a beautiful way. I mean, that kind of seems to be like a theme. You're so, you follow your intuition and look what happens, just beautiful things.
Mm-hmm.
So you walk into a studio of 10 students. How does your career begin to unfold from your connection to the choral community, or to the choral connection, to the choral community there in Hawaii at the time?
Well, so I taught, and we were here. And then my husband and I moved to the Big Island. We were in Kona.
Yes.
And so we ran a newspaper. We were a weekly paper in Kona. And we were there for 2.5 years. And during that time, I did teach some piano, but I also volunteered to help with the high school, Kona Waina,
yes.
And the band director was in charge of the musical. So I could teach the singing and so forth. So I helped out. And I was offered a job by the principal of Kona Waina to take on the choral music or start a choir at Kona Waina. And I also had a church choir there at the Christ Church Episcopal Church that's right there by the school up in Kona Waina. Anyway, but we knew that we were not going to stay in Kona, that we wanted to come back here, and which we did. We came back here, and then my husband was offered a grant, the Alicia Patterson grant. Did I ever tell you about
mm-hmm.
that? Well, it's kind of an interesting story. This is off subject of me, but Alicia Patterson was a Guggenheim. Her father owned the Chicago Sun, and she owned the Long Island Daily, and this was in the heyday of newspapers. And so Alicia Patterson owned this paper, and she was aging, and she knew she wanted to create a foundation for journalists to give them a stipend for a year to find a subject that they wanted to write on and go and study and research that and write for a year. And so Janusz won this.
Wow.
And so we went to Europe and lived in Vienna for a year.
As one does.
As one right. does. And so that whole wonderful experience. And so when we came back here, I had been the church choir director at St. Timothy's Church in Aea.
Mm-hmm.
It was the old St. Timothy's, not the new one that's up, the big one. This
right.
was the teeny little one. And the church, I was the choir director there and had much fun there and enjoyed it greatly. And had a good choir there. And the priest of the church was leaving at the same time that Janusz and I were leaving. As a matter of fact, they had one large party for us all leaving, because the priest, Fritz Maynooth, was going to take the job as headmaster of the priory. And this was a big, hairy deal, because they had always been run by nuns.
Mm-hmm.
It had never had a male on campus. Well, they had had John McCreary was the choir director because he was at the cathedral, but no faculty had been. And Fritz Maynooth was a priest, who had been a Marine and became a priest after his service in the military.
Oh, wow.
And he had worked on the Manhattan Project. He was a physicist. And so when he came to Hawaii, he was teaching at Punahou physics and sciences and became a priest and was at St. Timothy's. And so when he was leaving to take the job at headmaster of the Priory, I had no idea where the Priory was. I didn't know it was a school. And I was leaving, and so I said, well, when I get back a year from now, if you ever have a job open, I would love to apply. And he said, if you come back in a year, you have a job.
Wow.
And so I wrote him postcards during the
keeping
year.
Keeping the connection.
And when I came back, I had a job. And I was at the Priory 25 years.
Wow.
So... And John McCreary had been the choir. He had started a boys' choir, and Iolani and the Priory were united underneath the diocese. They were sort of one. And so it was not at all unusual that the choir master at the cathedral would be at both schools. So when I came, he left the Priory and just focused on Iolani and the boy choir, which he used at the cathedral to sing. So that was where that was. And I had this K-12 school. And the thing that Fritz Maynooth said to me when I got the job, I said, now what is it that you envision here? And he said, I want the best music program in the state. Mm. I said, okay.
What a charge.
It was, and it was freehand. And because what had been there was just a patchwork of, well, we'll have a few girls sing for the, you know. I had an opportunity to build a K-12 program, and I had the vision to do it. Now, I couldn't teach everything myself, so by and by we got a elementary teacher, and then of course we got a band teacher, and then we had an orchestra teacher, so forth and so on. So that's how that happened.
So you brought up this humongous figure in our choral community, John McCreary.
Mm-hmm.
Could you kind of talk a little bit about how you know him, what he means to you?
Mm-hmm. Well, John was very sweet to me, because here I was upsetting his part of his job, but he was so relieved. And he would from time to time hear the Priory girls sing in the cathedral when he was there either practicing organ or something like that. So he began to see that I was doing some work of merit. Mm-hmm. And he was always kind to me. And he had a reputation of being a, you know, sort of a rough and tumbly kind of guy, but I never knew him that way, except that he had a vicious sense of humor, which was fun. He called me Wicked Wanda with her warbling winches.
Wow.
But you had to take that.
Yeah, what a creative use of alliteration.
Anyway, that was my name for it. So there's Wicked Wanda.
Yeah.
He would call me very loudly out in a crowd, Wanda, Wicked Wanda. Anyway, he also had the Oratory Society that he created, and I sang in it, and met lots of wonderful musicians through singing with them and so forth. And so I sang all of those different things with him. And he, at one point, he asked me to sing a different part because he needed more support in a given part. And he'd say, can you sing this other part, or are you willing to sing this other, or can you? It was more like, can you do it? And I said, John, I can blend with a post. That was my voice. I knew how to blend with whomever I was standing next to. That was a gift. And so he used to bring that up now and again. Are you still singing with it post? No, that was wonderful.
So you're there at the Priory. You said you were there for 25 years. You're given this charge to build the best music program in the States, and then you inevitably have resources to hire a K-5 general educator, a band teacher, an orchestra teacher. But could you spend some time to kind of like talk about what that looked like in building a program?
Absolutely.
Here? Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I envisioned the whole. To start with the big vision, I knew it was going to be a K-12 program. Mm-hmm. And it needed to build on itself. So then I had to break it down to what steps would it take to do that. And I started simply by having the whole elementary school, that we had chapels. And so I would use those times to teach songs to the children of those chapel areas. So it'd be a hymn or it'd be a song. It didn't have to be a hymn. It could be a sacred song or not. I didn't care. Mm-hmm. The thing was that whole group started singing together. And then what was already in place is that in juniors and seniors in the high school were preparing for Founders Day or for graduation. So those class choirs were already there, and that was a model, you know. And then I had a choir, 9-12, and then I made a select choir. And so that was progressive. You could be in one, but you could be in the right. Next. Junior high was general music, and so again, I taught general music through choir. That's what I knew best. I knew I could get these kids to sing, but I could do general music with that focus, anyway. Fifth and sixth grade choirs and so forth. So then I wanted to have the children in the elementary have an opportunity to make choices. But before we did that, I hired an elementary teacher, and she and I agreed that she was, in her curricula, she was going to have recorder included at the second grade. And she was going to have ukulele at the third grade. Mm-hmm. And she was going to have keyboard at fourth grade.
Wow.
And that was incorporated in her classwork with these children. And the main thing that I had to fight for is to be, was to get the elementary principal and faculty and headmaster on that we were going to have these classes weekly, that there would be two classes of music a week or three classes depending on what was needed. And that was the constant battle, because that faculty and that administration wanted more time for their things. And I wanted more time for the music. So I was a constant advocate for more time. And if we're going to do this, we have to be able to have the time to have the students do it, not just in chapel. So that was it. So it was introducing the idea of music being in the curriculum versus just once a week fun singing.
Right.
You know. And then at the fifth and sixth grade, we allowed the students to experience a string instrument. And then they were introduced to it at the end of the fourth grade semester. But at the fifth grade, there was another introductory, so they didn't have to decide on the first day of school. But by the mid-semester, they could choose to take a string instrument. And so we started building an orchestra program, beginning, wow. And the teacher was aware of Suzuki and, you know, implemented many of the Suzuki ideas within that. And so they were up and playing very quickly. And then at the sixth grade, every element, fifth and sixth graders were introduced to band instruments. And then again, mid first semester, they could pick an instrument they wanted to play. Even if they had chosen a string instrument and now wanted to try this, that was okay, you know. But anyway, but they all sang in choir. Fifth and sixth grade was a choir.
Yeah.
It was a whole choir.
It almost seems like the curricular framework that you were trying to, or what you successfully implemented, was very reminiscent of, let's say, like a K-12 Westminster Choir College.
Oh, well,
was that the choir? Well, choir was like the lifeblood, or like the guiding North Star of the music curriculum, with elements of choice through instrumental exploration.
Uh-huh. Right.
Very, that's very, very fascinating.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then we actually, Kathy Grozier, for a while, she had been an accompanist of mine at the Prairie.
Right. And Kathy is, who is Grozier. She to you right now? Yeah.
Well, let me just finish by saying that she started a bell choir.
Got it.
And so if you could either ring or sing.
Ring or sing.
So anyway, Kathy has been such a good friend over the years. And I was at she and Carl's, their wedding, which I'm trying to remember the year. But anyway, she was my accompanist, so I got to go to their wonderful wedding. And so we remained friends all these years. She, in addition to accompanying the choir at Priory, she also accompanied the Hawaii Children's Opera Chorus, which I was conducting at the time. So she was on that wing too. Yeah, she's an amazing musician, and I'm a remarkable musician in this town. Really brings a lot to the community.
Yeah. Well, it looks like we've transitioned to the Hawaii Youth Opera Chorus.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk a little bit about that and your positionality with that
organization? Okay, but it wasn't Hawaii Youth Opera Chorus when I
right.
was there.
It wasn't.
It was the Hawaii Opera Chorus, H-O-T,
right.
Hawaii Opera Theater, had a chorus, a children's chorus, that only purpose in their minds was to provide the children's parts when they did an opera that required a children's chorus.
Okay.
And that was the focus of the board, that was their intention, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the second of the director, the founder and organizer of it, Ellen Lum.
Mm-hmm.
And she had retired, or was retiring, and so I took it over. And so I did that, and Kathy was the accompanist.
Yeah.
And then came along an opportunity for us to do a textbook recording. I was offered a job through the lab school.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing a music curriculum, and I was asked to do the recordings. And so I said, this is perfect, because we can use these children to do this, and it was a summer program, and da da da. So I presented it to the board that we could do this wonderful thing, and that there was a little bit of money that could come to the organization, you know, to help da 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 da. And they basically said, no, that's not our mission. And I thought it was so short-sighted and so disregarding anything except this one narrow thing that they saw. So I said, well, I'm going to audition children in the community to come and be a part of this, if possibly, because I'm interested in doing the textbook series. So, you know, we should be able to do it,
mm-hmm.
if not with the Children's Opera Chorus. But I did open it up to the membership. But then I put an ad in the paper at the time. We had newspapers, and you knew how to connect with people. And anyway, I had 125 children show up
wow.
for auditions.
Wow, wow, wow.
At the Priory.
Wow.
In my classroom.
Wow.
And I went, holy camoly. It was over 100. I think it was about 125 children. And I could only have 18 in the studio. That was the size, that was the limitation. For the only reason that the limitation was the size of the studio. So anyway, wow. I auditioned all of these children one by one and wrote careful notes on them. I sent every child a personal letter saying that either that they were selected or in that they were alternates. Mm-hmm. I'd never said that they had failed their audition. Mm-hmm. I simply invited them to be an alternate, and that because of the limitations of the studio, I could only pick a few, but that I would invite them to be an alternate. And so then we proceeded to have this recording. And at the end of that, it was August, and I thought, I don't want to go back to the opera chorus. I've already seen such a bigger picture. And so I wrote every child a second letter and said, I am starting a children's chorus. It will meet at the Priory in such and such afternoon. I'm inviting you to come and join us. The first year, I had 80 students that came and paid a tuition to be in. That's how it started. And then that was the Hawaii Children's Chorus.
Hawaii Children's Chorus.
And Kathy was the accompanist.
So your relationship with, your like artistic and professional relationship with Kathy, like, is kind of helped kind of germinate this incredible legacy of community youth choruses and community youth music.
She was
making.
A part of the early part of it. Yes, yes, to answer your comment, yes. And she became more and more involved with Carl at the
church.
The church.
Yeah.
He was the organist there and the accompanist there when Joe Hansen was there.
Right.
Well, then that's when they married. And so Kathy was helpful there, but she wasn't the organist yet. Well, when Joe left, Carl decided to just focus on the choral part of it, and Kathy became the full-time organist. Mm-hmm. And so she needed to leave some of her things behind, and so I then had other companies.
Right.
But she was there at the beginning. You're absolutely right. I hadn't quite thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right.
And then as Kathy got more involved, then, you know, her and Carl inevitably, you know, got married and all that stuff.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
I never really put that together.
They married before she was the organist.
Oh, right, yeah. Wow.
Except that she played for their wedding and he sang for their wedding.
That's beautiful. So this... You send the letters out. You begin a community youth chorus organization, and so many things happen in the coming years. But I would like to fast forward into time and talk about this incredible festival.
Oh, okay.
That you help and also brought into Hawaii and the Pacific Rim
Children's
the Pacific Rim Children's Choral Festival.
Festival, yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about that?
Sure.
And how that
happened.
Yeah.
Well, it's a great story of how it happened because I was invited to, can I just give you enough backstory
to tell you
that I had to leave my career for family reasons early.
Mm-hmm.
So I retired from the Priory earlier, or from choral directing because of family issues having to do with my mother's illness and various things like that. So it was a big leap for me to jump off the side of the mountain. But fortunately, I had really good connections with my professional colleagues, and I stayed connected.
Mm-hmm.
And through professional organizations, and I would, you know, attend workshops and things like that because of my interests. Even though I didn't have time to do it full time at that moment in time. So one of the things that I was invited to was a children's chorus festival that was held at Canterbury Cathedral in England. And I went all the way to England to do it. I mean, what a good excuse to go to, you know, UK. So I was there with, I was the only choir director there that was, didn't have a choir. Everybody else had a choir with them. And so one evening we're sitting around a table after a day's worth of festival goings on. And everyone was having dinner and we were laughing and giggling. And somebody across the table said, "Do you have a festival like this in Hawaii, Wanda?" Mm-mm. And I said, without missing a beat, I said, "Well, if you come, we'll have a festival in Hawaii." And they said, "Oh, we'll come. Of course we'll come." And it just burst forth a seed in my mind. And the more I thought about it in my private moments, I thought, I know exactly how to do this. I know where the resources are in my community. And I will do one. I'll do one. And it will be like I would want my students to come to. What would I want my students to experience if they came? And I knew that I wanted a culture interchange. I didn't want them to come and, you know, sightsee and call it a day, you know, sing and it's over. Yeah. No. It wasn't what I wanted at all. I wanted them to sing a song in one of our cultural languages here. And I wanted them to see maybe dancing or instruments of that. So the more I thought about it, the bigger the idea got. It was like a just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so I took, from that summer workshop, I took 2 years to put it together. Wow. And by the time it came time to do it, I had marketed it, I had sold it out, and sold a second year before the first one even happened, because I was so clear on what they would have when they came here. My brochure was done by Mark Conching, helped me. I have a very dear friend who, actually she was the one who was in the travel industry that helped Dale Noble on his final concert to Scandinavia. She was very skillful in the policy issues and you know, the liability issues involved. She helped me write all those policies. I had so much help because I knew to ask. I knew to ask people. And I had people. And so our first festival, which was in 2001, I had called personally the first the year one of the 2 years that it took me to put it together. I called every one of those people that was sitting around that Canterbury table. I said, "Do you remember when you said?" Right. And the first year, 8 of them came. And the other 2 came in the future. Every single person around that table ultimately came. And so we did, like for instance, we'd sing a Japanese song in Japanese, and Diane Koshy was helpful with the Japanese language. And I had the taiko drummers, you know, with come with that. We did a Filipino song. I had Ruth Pfeiffer come and help me with the language of that. And we had the Filipino dancers come and do the various dancers with that. We had instrumentalists come too, playing some of the original instruments. We had Chinese songs. We had a dragon come through the audience, you know. So it was very experiential.
Wow.
So it was wonderful. And fortunately, I knew how to do it. It was just innate knowledge from all my life experiences. And Jace, it was such a wonderful gift to be that chapter in my life after this career that I had had, mm-hmm. that took turns that I didn't expect. You know, you don't expect that you have to retire early and wind up doing something else, but you do sometimes. And then here was this presented to me. And I just, I'm so grateful because it was a wonderful chapter. Just great. 12 years.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've discussed career successes, career highs. But I think at the heart of this lies the connection to our state ACDA chapter. And because one thing that you've been really clear to state is that so much of the successes in your career were in large part due to your connection or to your relationships with your colleagues.
Absolutely.
Yes. Thank you for saying that.
The kindness and the generosity of my colleagues. Certainly, there were many along the way. The one in particular, of course, was Dale Noble. Interestingly, Dale Noble, Wanda Garabin, Niall and Roy Hallman of the Boy Choir, the Hall of the Boys Hallman Choir, and let's see, there's one more. McCreary. We all came the same year to Hawaii.
Really?
Yeah.
All of you.
Yes.
Coral giants arriving at the same year. Is that not a whole Ilona or a sign?
If it's not exactly the same year, it's within, you know, the same time frame anyway. Mm. But there was a gentleman, you ask about ACDA, the whole founding of our chapter. Mm-hmm. You know, ACDA used to be a part of the MENC, which was it was connected, and then they broke off to do their own thing.
Right.
Okay, well, from that get-go, Kansas forward, I went to those conferences because I knew that I lived out here in the Mille Ocean, and I needed to know what was going on nationally. I was interested, I wanted to learn. I needed a place to get my getting place. Mm-hmm. And so the conventions provided that, the regionals provided that for me. And at the time, Bob Hines was at the University of Hawaii. He was the choral director at the University of Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And he approached me, I was at the Priory. I came in 1970 to the Priory. That was my first year at the Priory. And in 1975, he came to me, I guess 74, the semester before 75 actually came, because he asked me, would I help him start a chapter here and get everybody on board and become members and so forth and so on. And so I said, absolutely, I would. So when he and I went to the convention in 1975, we were established as a chapter. And we had gathered everyone we knew who was in choral music to become a member in 1975. And so Bob Hines was the first president, and I was the second president of ACDA. And then Dale was number three. And number four was Ken Staten, who was from the Big Island. Yeah. He's the only officer president that we ever had from a neighbor island because of we didn't have Zoom then.
Right.
And so it was very challenging and difficult in that way. And then the next one was Bud Klein, who we just lost this last year. He was fifth president, went on from there. And so another person that was really key was, by the way, Bob Hines started the first collegiate festival, which became
Ehimini,
at first it was just the collegiate choral festival. He was the first one to do it and got all of the different groups involved. And then another big one was in 1977, Bud was our treasurer at the time, mm-hmm. and I was president at that time, mm-hmm. and Kathy Crozier was the dean of AGO, And at that time, 1977, there was a thing called the, what was it called? The Council of Churches. Mm-hmm. That was the name of it. And it was literally an intercollegiate group of church musicians and ministers and so forth that would, it was a great supportive thing. It wasn't just one denomination. It was a wonderful organization. And Pat Mumford was the executive secretary at the time. So she, Bud Klein, Kathy Crozier, and I, the four of us, created the first church choir festival. And we did 32 years of the church choir festival. Now the church, the Council of Churches is long gone, and mm-hmm. when they left, I mean when they did the demise of them, ACDA carried it on. AGO was very supportive along the way by providing things like an accompanist or the organist, or very often the organist allowed us to be in the church, like Central Union hosted us for 25 years. But that was Nile Hallman, you see, she was there during that time. And then, so ACDA really carried that forward all those years until it just wore out, I guess mm-hmm. you want to say. So that was in 1977, and then, as I said, we went on for 32. Now, in 1987, which is 10 years later, Jim Smith was at BYU.
Okay.
BYU.
La'ie. Yeah.
And he wanted to start a select honor choir, high school honor choir. And so we started the Hawaii All-State Honor Choir in 1977 because he hosted us at BYU.
And, okay.
And he was president, you know, he was right. president for a period of time. Yeah, so we've had some interesting people help along the way.
Yeah. How have you seen our state chapter evolve? You know, what are some of the things that you've observed that have really carried us through up until today, 2021?
Well, when the leadership has been such that the leadership or the board saw the importance of serving our colleagues mm-hmm. and creating events that would be inclusive and bring people together. Biggest example I can think of at the moment is when Philip Steinbacher, who was the lone wolf over in the, and what was the fellow's name?
Philip in Kauai at Island School.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of the previous guy. What was his name? Oh, I can't think of it at the moment. But anyway, he was at Kauai High School, and David Conrad.
Okay.
David Conrad was the only choral director in schools, in the high school at Kauai High. There was one other choral person over there, his name was Greg Shepherd, mm-hmm. and he had the community chorus. Mm-hmm. And then David Conrad was hired by Kauai High School, and then because of the auditions for the honor choir, we sent auditioners to the neighbor islands. ACDA sent auditioners to the islands. That's how we got so many islanders to come. And that's how I met Philip Steinbacher. So then for a while there were two. And then sadly, David passed away and they never replaced him at Kauai High School. And so Philip was the lone wolf over there. So what we provided Philip and David was an opportunity for their students to interact with other choral students in a higher level, more involved experience, and with a clinician of world-class clinicians that we had year after year after year, that they wouldn't have been able to provide their students. Mm-hmm. So that was just one example. And so any kind of in-service training or mentoring or when that was the lead of the leadership of ACDA, we really excelled, I think.
Yeah.
And seeing a bigger picture than just our classroom or just our institution. Yeah. You could get bogged down thinking it's all about one thing.
Right. Especially here in Hawaii, we're already insular as it is. Right?
Yes, we're insular, but I'll tell you another ingredient, mm-hmm. Jace, is that we all have too many jobs. and what I mean by that is that there's so few of us,
right,
that we say yes to everything because mm-hmm. we're asked to do many things. Mm-hmm. And we say, well, yes, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, what's another?
Because we all have servants' hearts. Yeah.
And so you can get so bogged down and so focused on, I've just got to get through the next thing, mm-hmm. that to come up for air and say, no, this is more than about me and my little programs. What can we do for our profession? What can we do for our colleagues who want to be good at their craft? Mm-hmm. You know, I tell you, we all had somebody along the way that we had thought, I want to be like that, or that either mentored us or we saw an example, or you know, so that we said that's really good. And I sometimes wonder, when do we get to see that here,
right,
out here in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah. I suppose, like, one way I think that we should potentially end this conversation is, like, what kept you serving with ACDA, and why is it important for a incoming music educator or someone that's new to the choral craft to remain in ACDA?
Well, these are really good questions. Well, to the first part, I stayed because I was invited to remain. I was invited to participate, even when I wasn't president or I wasn't the treasurer. I was on the board or whatever. So it's very important. I see those that are in our community today that are not involved anymore. Mm-hmm. And it saddens me because they have a wealth of experience and information and talent that we could utilize if we would figure out how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's that invitation to remain. Now, yes, I was motivated to raise my hand and say, yes, yeah, I'll help out, or I'll participate, or I'll do this or that or the other thing. So I think part of it was that I wanted the connection, and I was getting something out of it.
Right.
So I was receiving, and I was also encouraged to stay a part of the group. I was never saying, well, you're retired, so that's right, the end of you. You know, that's a mistake.
Right.
And so I think that was one thing. And then for a younger person who is just beginning, I think, again, it's offering them more than just a place on the board. That's not where they need to be. It's getting them involved in creating an event that will offer something, be it in the professional day or other events like reading sessions or whatever, getting them to participate in something that ACDA offers that they get a Benny out of.
Right.
And then they are
a professional takeaway.
Yes.
So they can put in the classroom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then I think that if they do that successfully, and you see, we've observed people who, you know, that guy really is good. He's helpful. He sees what needs to be done. He steps up, you know, or she steps up, whichever. Mm-hmm. And seeing that and then utilizing that and getting them more involved. I think that's probably where it's at, is feeling connected and feeling useful and feeling, and then on the other side, feeling not that, not forgotten, you know, those kinds of things.
That's important. I mean, that's why I remain in ACGA, is that opportunity to kind of see that even past or outside of the classrooms, we are very much part of a community.
And we have as much needs as our students do.
Oh, absolutely. But it's also to see, like, these people that we've grown up adoring or grown up just seeing as a revered mentor, to also see them model that they themselves are lifelong learners too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for spending the time to talk with me today.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
And there you have it, a fond mahalo to Auntie Wanda Garibin for sharing her life, her wisdom, and her laughter. Please join us next month as we welcome Dr. Alex Schumacher, Director of Choral Activities at Hawaii Pacific University, who will interview Susie McCreary-Dupree, a treasured choral director here in Hawaii, who serves as Artistic Director of the Kona Choral Society and Windward Choral Society. She'll share with us about her life, her connection to our choral community here in Hawaii Nei, and about her late father, John McCreary, the choral giant. The intro theme is Hawaii Loa by Lika Martin, arranged by Les Sabalos. This podcast is produced and edited by members of the American Choral Directors Association Hawaii State Chapter. This is Nana Ike Kumu, honoring Hawaii's choral legacy. Aloha.